Nation, it's Rob Has a Podcast. And now here's the guy who is not Rob Sesternino. I am Brent Wagamott. Hello, everybody, and welcome to RHAP's continuing coverage of Big Brother 21. We are here to talk about the Big Brother 21 finale. And obviously, I am not Rob Sesternino. Rob Sesternino and Taryn Armstrong are in the backyard as we speak of Big Brother 21's house. They are getting ready to ask your questions to the house guests, but that is not going to stop us from having our fun tonight. I brought three fantastic guests to talk about this a little bit snoozeworthy finale, if I'm being honest. First up, you know her from my adventures on RuPaul's Drag Race. And you love her, and I love her. She was on my team for So You Think You Can Podcast, and she's still my number one. It's Liana Boris, everybody. Liana, how are you?
I'm good. Thank you for bringing back that memory. Honestly, Jackson finding out that America thinks that he could be racist and coming out to confetti looking just so incredibly upset actually makes this win palatable. So I'm here and ready to talk about everything.
I thought my spirits noticeably improved when that happened, by the way. When the winner was announced was the best moment of the episode for me, and not because Jackson was winning. Let me just tell you that. Also with us tonight, looking absolutely freaking stunning, I must say, is Kirsten Said What? Kirsten McInnes from Big Brother Canada 6. What's up, girl?
I really thought you were going to say looking stunning Matt Liguori, but hello. I'm so happy that Nicole is America's favorite. And like, you know what? A boy wanted confetti, and I guess he probably should have wished for a little bit more because, ooh, that reaction.
Honestly, that is exactly what happened. See, I had this genie bottle, and Taryn and I have been talking about all the time that wishes don't come out the way that you want them to. You have to wish for exactly what you want. And the boy wanted confetti. He got confetti, but he got a whole lot more. And to talk about that also is Matt Liguori. Matt, how are you?
I am great. So happy to be here. It was crazy season and not the ending that we wanted, but our girl still walked away with some money, and I'm so excited for that. I'm so happy she's out of that house and free to go be with some actual good people, her family. I'm so happy for Nicole tonight, and that's the main storyline that I'm running with, so happy to be here.
Thank you. That's one of the main storylines that I know I'm running with. I do notice some people in the chat asking about the backyard interviews. The backyard interviews are not live. We do not have that capability yet, so they will be uploaded after this podcast throughout the night. I know Scott St. Pierre is going to be working hard on it all night, and you should see most of them live by sometime tomorrow. Just check those out when you can. As I said previously, if you have questions, Scott St. Pierre is monitoring social media, hashtag RHAP, and you can ask us whatever you want, and we will tackle it. But I have to go with the overarching news from tonight. The big lead, Jackson does indeed win Big Brother, 6-3. Matt, I know you were talking about Nicole is your favorite storyline tonight, but we have to talk about the winners. So what do you think? How did he do it?
Jackson was such a interesting story. The way that he won the game by winning so many competitions, by being the one that was initially kind of pushed aside from his alliance and then ends up, you know, making his own new alliance with Nicole and Cliff, which obviously saved him in the one round of the game that he wasn't safe, ends up bringing him all the way to the end of the game where he has a chance to win himself to the end. It's not something that I wanted to see happen. It's not something a lot of people wanted to see end up happening. And honestly, I don't have a whole lot of praise for him. I think that you guys have talked about it. Taryn's talked a lot about it, about how the competition's been kind of more physical than in previous years. And that's kind of frustrating because obviously Jackson was the front runner in all of those competitions. At the end of the day, it does seem like all of the crying that we did for the past couple of years about how the stronger player should be the winner came back to maybe bite us a little bit this year, because the person who the jury perceived as the stronger player is the one who they ended up giving the votes to. And this was the one season where I thought maybe we shouldn't think like that. Maybe we should have the person who had the underrated game walk out victorious. And I thought that Holly did a really good job tonight. But it seemed, I really feel like the jury was determined to prove that, look, we're going to get it right this season. We're going to vote, you know, emotions aside, Tommy and Christy were both like, we're voting for the stronger player. And this is where we ended up. So, yeah, Mickey is our winner.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, Yeah, go ahead, Liana.
I think that that was something that was apparent from the jury roundtable. And I know that we hear it a lot, the like, oh, it's my head versus my heart. But I really think that this was a season where the jury felt like we need to reward the person who we think played the best game, regardless of some of the other events that happened. And that being said, the people that Jackson was truly egregious to were in the pre-jury. So it's a little easier when you weren't the direct target of some of his microaggressions or macroaggressions, as it were, to reward him the $500,000. Although we did see 3 votes go towards Holly, which is, I think, a direct result of him being kind of a jerk. And by kind of a jerk, I mean a lot of a jerk. And so I'm unsurprised by the result tonight. I think there were a lot of us that sort of felt like this was the outcome that we were going to see. And I think the jury roundtable, plus what we've seen previously, kind of all makes sense. It all comes together to give us this final result.
Yeah, Kirsten, I have to say, though, that between Matt and Liana, I feel like they're selling Mickey a little bit short here. Maybe it's just me, but I feel like that he really did do a good job of navigating Big Brother, especially when you look at the people that he took out in Sis and Jessica, two people, like as we talked about on the roundtable a couple times, removing pieces from the Jenga board that didn't upset the balance too much. He wasn't safe the entire time, and yet he still managed to make it to the end. I feel like that has to be at least give and do.
Yeah, like definitely there's some things that were good, and you know, getting rid of people that aren't going to make yourself more of a target, definitely a valid strategy. But I mean, I'm not happy. I don't think that he was great. And I think that from Cliff's first jury question about jury management, Jackson's answer was very clear that he does not know what that is. Like, he literally did not understand the question. And that's a problem for me personally. So as much as it's like, yeah, he did make some really brilliant moves, there's just so many negatives that I find it hard to be like, yeah, the best player won. Because...
But I think that's something where separating the personal things that he did aside and then looking at the actual gameplay moves, because, you know, I will use the move that he made at the final five as... for me, the most clear example of his grasp on the game and the way that he learned to turn a social situation from something that was not trending in his favor, completely force it into something that gave him what he wanted. I mean, I am extremely impressed by that move. And I know, okay, it's one move out of 99 days. Okay, you have to play the rest of the time. And if he's going to be a jerk the rest of the time, I understand why it could be hard to award the $500,000 to somebody who played like that. But I mean, I'm kind of with Brent here. Like, I am impressed with some of the things that I saw with Jackson when you are able to sort of pull that apart from him as a person.
And I am too. And I probably didn't convey that very well, but I'm with both of you on that. I think that his moves to take out those people he did on his HOHs, while it looks on paper like you only took out Jess and Sis, exactly what Brent just said, those were two pieces that kept the bigger players in the house to be going after each other. And of course, you know, Holly and Jackson were still such a big target, but by having Christy and Tommy still in the game when they were both such big threats for Big Brother in general, but just the two of them like being such a tight duo with Tommy kept taking Christy off the block, it was very clear that they were keeping them in the house for a reason. They were taking pieces away from them when they took Sis out that did the job without actually taking a shot at the other bigger players. So I thought that was great. My only thing is, maybe I'm trying to say that Holly also deserved it just as much. And I was having a little bit of a debate with some of my friends during the jury portion when they were pleading their cases. I thought Holly did really well. And then a lot of people thought that Holly didn't do so well. I thought that Holly played the game from the position she said she played it in. She was kind of behind the scenes. And I thought that she played it more effectively than maybe we have been giving her credit for lately. And the way that she articulated it during that jury speech, I thought was great. So it seemed like in more than in the previous years when you had Tyler and Paul, I felt like both of these to play deserving games. Obviously, Jackson's was a much more in-your-face game, but I felt like Holly could have gotten the votes as well.
Yeah, I have to say, as I said at the beginning of the show, I here's the thing. I felt like it was a pretty snoozeworthy finale until we got to the pre-jurors. And I felt like part of the decision was to start with the roundtable a little bit misguided because there wasn't a ton of energy or much passion, I felt like, coming from the roundtable, Kirsten. I felt like that it was, they were, here's what I felt like the roundtable was telling me, that Holly probably had no chance, Jackson was probably going to win, and they would probably give it to Nicole if she got there, but we knew she probably wasn't going to get there. Is that what you were getting to, or did you enjoy it more with Dr. Will?
Yeah, I thought that that was definitely the vibe. I think that also so much of it being driven by like Annalise and her thoughts on people makes it really hard to be connected to it because she's confused, as she said several times. And so it's like, well, we're not confused about this. So having it explained to her like she's five is not all that entertaining. Jack calling Dr. Will Doc and Bud is offensive to me. So I just really
don't like that. Jack.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Jack, who do you think you are?
Who do you think you are? Exactly. Leon, I have to say that my favorite part of the round table was Kat when, you know, the whole season, she's like, I'm not a bottom feeder. That was the whole thing that would stop the bottom feeders from moving forwards because Kat would not recognize that she was a bottom feeder and that she wasn't in the main alliance. Kat says, Holly went after big targets. Mickey went after the bottom feeders and, you know, pointedly looking at Sis and Jessica with camera shots to include. I was living for that moment. And I know that Kat was too.
Yeah. Very sassy. Very much like, so if you get it, which Jess and Sis probably did not, but implying that they were the bottom feeders. Yeah, I thought that it was fun to see some of the interpersonal dynamics between them. Although, yeah, I thought overall it was pretty lackluster. Again, like Kirsten, my favorite part was Sis just being confused, saying, you know, I'm confused by her gameplay. I'm confused. Okay, Sis, like, what's new?
Yeah. And here's the thing, too. What kind of game does Sis think she played?
Thank you.
Like, I'm sorry. Where is she? She's like, oh, Holly just was with Jackson. Like, I don't know what kind of game that is. I'm sorry. What did you do?
Well, she was in a chicken costume. Okay.
She was in a chicken costume. And I feel like Nick did kind of backhand her a little bit with, which was, you know, Holly at least won two HOHs. What did you win? What did you do, girl? I felt like that's what he was saying there. I have to say that the round table was a snooze, but part two of the HOH competition was even snoozier. I do want to point out one bit of fake news I felt like we got from the finale tonight where Holly, and I'm sorry I don't have a soundboard here for you guys, but Holly directly saying in the diary room, I've never been rock climbing before. I don't know what that is. I probably should have done that before I got here. And I'm going to her Instagram, Miss Holly Allen in Malibu, California. Hobbies include spontaneously climbing things with her on a rock wall. Girl, I'm not buying that. And I feel like we need a recount on that one, Matt.
She's trying to hide her capabilities from us all season long. And she just continued that into the diary room. So I don't know what you're expecting from her, but she's playing the game.
That's the best lie she told all season.
It really was, though. But I was so disappointed with part two because, you know, we had talked about this before. I felt like the questions were super easy. It was mainly physical. Taryn and I like were totally bemoaning the fact that there was nothing that really resembled anything that it was really difficult in either part four veto or part two HOH. And I was really bummed about that, Liana. I was like, our old school big brother, I feel like, is going away and being replaced with all of these physical competitions where, yeah, it's mental and the producers can argue it's mental until the cows come home. But you and I watch Big Brother. If we know the answers to some of those things, we know that they are not that hard. Come on.
Yeah. And I mean, I think you can also say the same thing about part one of the HOH competition. It's like, oh, it's not an endurance competition, you know, because they have to do a puzzle. It's like, okay, yeah, sure. They have to do a 10-second puzzle and then go run across, you know, like chasm for 25 rounds or whatever. Like, no, it's ultimately a physical competition. And I feel like this was sold the same way. Oh, sure. It's a day's comp because they have to then go up and put the days. It's a day's comp. Okay. It's mental. It's a day's comp memorization. When really, yeah, it ultimately seemed to come down to who could climb the rock wall faster.
Yeah. And it wasn't just that. This was pointed out to me on Twitter that there were only two instances of non-eviction events that were on that rock wall. You know, the house guests know everything about, you know, what happened on what day and who was evicted by a vote of what to what and who played in what veto and all that. What they don't remember necessarily is like what day the clowns came in. You saw that both of them had problems with that. There needed to be more things like that on the wall, like the day that the alien came in and berated Jack, things like that. The day that Jackson was blown up with the alien as an alien doctor when it kept exploding on him. All of that kind of stuff I felt like would play really well in a competition like that because they don't necessarily remember stuff that they weren't personally involved in or paying attention to. On the other hand, it seems like Big Brother kind of wants stuff like this where the more physical person wins, Kirsten, and I'm not really happy with it. I can't imagine that Taryn is too. I know we were both bitching about that, but it just revealed itself more tonight, I felt.
Yeah,
like.
I'm sure Taryn is absolutely seething, and I'm not happy about it either. I feel like, yes, being, you know, physically fit is part of Big Brother, and there are always going to be some physical competitions. But what I find most compelling is when it's like, how badly do you want it? Or, you know, how hard have you worked to get this? Not how many weights have you lifted? How fast can you run a mile? How much rock climbing have you done? I just like, I understand that those competitions maybe are a little bit more visually appealing, but they're just empty and kind of meaningless as far as I'm concerned. And maybe that's not the prevailing opinion, but I don't know.
For me, it's way more visually appealing to see someone cut all their hair off. I don't know. That's me.
Like, I want to see someone shave their damn head.
Yeah. I think it's actually really interesting because if you think now, let's say this is a trend moving forward, the sort of adage of, oh, we have to get out the physical threats, you know, oh, well, whatever. It's, you know, the later comps in Big Brother aren't physical. Well, now what if they are physical? So now that strategy to get out the stronger physical players actually might be relevant.
And and watch next season. We're going to like the strong physical player and we're going to be pissed off because Jackson ruined that.
Yeah, it's going to be some sort of woke, muscled, amazing human. They're going to go home second.
We thought that we were getting that this year. Everyone loved Nick and Jack when they walked in the house. And then it was like, sorry about that.
I like to state for the record that I did not like Nick from the start. But you Jack did have me fooled. I'm pretty sure I have tweets where I was like, I don't get it, guys.
All right.
But he's certainly have preseason receipts on Nick, but Jack had me fooled. So
on the topic of the final three comps, before we get too far away from it, part three was pretty bad too.
I was just getting to part three.
Well, maybe you're welcome, I guess, for leading you right into it. But, it was, those questions were terrible. There was one question that I wrote down that I thought was good. The fact that they included a memory wall question, which I guess was also along the same line of my criticism here, that it was just so easy that each one of these questions, by the time they were done answering the questions, asking the questions, both Mickey and Holly had the answers locked and they weren't even like second guessing it, thinking about it. They weren't, debating it in their head. They had the answers. They knew what they were.
Liana, I was waiting for Julie Chen to come in and say what she always says when this starts happening, which is, please wait for me to say answers, please, before you reveal your answers, because it looked really terrible on television. No?
Yeah, no, so I would agree with that. When it's very clearly that easy, when you have people that, especially Jackson, standing back, folding his arms, being like, oh, I already got this on lock. I mean, it's not really that intense. Although I guess it was intense, but it wasn't intense.
I'm surprised no one took a nap.
Oh, those friends look so comfortable.
They had beds.
I know. It's like they spent all that much time making some glamping setup and they're not going to enjoy it. Like, go for it.
They both got every single question correct, except for Holly misreading one of them.
Yeah,
she thought that the one about Sis said that Sis was not there for... Because Sis wasn't there for Zingbot. She thought it said that Sis was there for Zingbot and she misread it. Other than that, both of them got every single question correct. That tells you something. Those questions were way too easy. I don't know why they or how they expected either of them. Like, maybe they wanted it to go down to a tiebreaker. I'm not sure, but they were just really bad.
Well, I have to say that maybe they do want it to go down to a tiebreaker because that allows them to quantify it from a TV standpoint. You know, it is live television. They want to know exactly how long something's going to last. They probably have it calculated out till, you know, this is 6 minutes and 30 seconds that this is going to last. If we go to a tiebreaker, if we don't, it's going to be 7 minutes, 30 seconds, something like that. But to me, I'm with Matt. Like, all of these questions were really easy. And the house guests, you know, you're stuck in a house all day. You have nothing to do but think about questions like this and who was evicted on what day and who played in what veto competition and how many times they played in the veto competition and anything like that. I felt like that, again, if they would ask more non-comp, non-eviction questions about what was happening on what day and or what day, what fight happened, things like that, I felt like that would have been something that played better on television and overall would have given us a more interesting result.
Yeah, I mean, I think I actually I appreciate the fact that they're asking questions that have to do with events that happened in the game. That's what I appreciate. But like I think you both are saying, I would rather them be a little bit more difficult and about things that maybe didn't directly relate to them or weren't necessarily like exactly game related, like some funny, stupid stuff too. You know, what day did Jackson, you know, get his watermelon smash, you know, like in the punishment, right? Like that's something that I would rather have. That'd be more fun. But in terms of the actual format of the final three HOH, I mean, I think I like these types of questions more.
Yeah, I would agree with that. Although I don't know, I Taryn makes this point on the roundtable that the questions in the past, you know, like up until Big Brother 19, which Josh beat Paul in part three of the HOH competition because it was, you know, what did this jury member say? How does this jury member feel? That kind of thing. Things that are not easy for people to necessarily answer gives us a more interesting result. And I was like the same person for 19 seasons who I was like, I hate part three because you can't, you know, necessarily study for it and win it. But then when I saw Kevin Martin do what he did on Big Brother Canada, and now I see what they're doing on Big Brother 20 and 21, where they're getting literally everything right, it's really not fun to watch. And I wish they'd go back to the old way. And I think Taryn, the robot, probably had it right the first time, Matt.
Yeah, when you get to the final three, there is an element to being the winner of the season where if you don't win that competition, you have to have convinced the other two people that you're the best person to sit next to. So in a way, you know, you can't, I mean, nobody should be relying on themselves winning to get there. Obviously, that's the most ideal path to be the one who wins that final HOH and gets to pick who you sit next to. But you need to have the opportunity where both people are going to take you if you can't take yourself. And if you're not able to do that, you're not going to win the game. A lot of players have gone down that way. Just a couple seasons ago, look at Vanessa, not win the game, lost, you know, didn't make it to the final two. It happens, and it's annoying when it happens because you want to see that person rewarded, but that's the game. And I think I'm with you that I wish it would go back to that kind of competition.
Yeah. So, Kirsten, we have Mickey win 8-7, win part three. Any chance that we had of Holly evicting Jackson and taking Nicole with her to the final two was totally obliterated in that moment when she misread the question. I was bitter about it. I don't think she would have evicted Mickey anyway, although she should have based on the results that we saw after. But I thought it was not even good television then when Holly and Nicole were giving their speeches. Nicole, God love her. Maybe there's no chance he's going to evict Holly there, but I felt like she really said nothing in that final three speech. She really didn't give Jackson a reason to keep her except for saying, I hope blood is thicker than water, whatever that means. I'm like, say something about $500,000. That would be something good to say.
Yeah, I feel like it's the point where that decision is made earlier. Like, there's not that much that you can say in that last 30 seconds that's going to make that much of a difference. I do think it's a good opportunity to kind of hammer home the points that you've been making all week. And it would have been nice to see more than that. But I don't think that there was a chance that he was not going to take Holly.
I will say that I'm glad Big Brother didn't give us too much hope where they went, you know, then Nicole lost part two. She's crying. That's terrible to watch. We got one segment of her talking to Holly, Liana, where it was like, you know, here's the reasons why you might want to take me. You know, if you're sitting next to Jackson, it's probably going to be looked at as he drove the bus and you were riding behind you. You really want that, you could take me. I was in favor of Nicole really throwing Jackson under the bus all week long. I don't really feel like she ever did exactly what I wanted her to say. I wanted her to say something more about women empowerment, how much of a baller Holly would look like by evicting Jackson, how the jury would literally just bow down to her and hand her the money because they were all so frustrated with Jackson and he was the mover and shaker of the season. But Nicole never did that, and thus she was evicted at the final three. And it was bittersweet to watch.
Yeah, actually, in terms of the pacing of the episode, they were on a clip, which I really appreciated because they were obviously trying to get through everything. And so I think part of that was just showing this brief snippet of like, you know, look, this is what you expect this not to happen. It's probably not going to happen. So we're not going to spend a lot of time doing it. Although, Nicole really needed to hammer home to Holly this whole concept of the fact that Holly will lose if she is next to Jackson.
Yep.
It's going to happen.
I
mean, Holly needs to send it and get rid of Jackson. And you know, we didn't get to see that. And that's why probably the show didn't really talk about it all that much. So,
yeah. Well, go ahead, Matt.
I've also been disappointed in Nicole's gameplay the past week/2 weeks. It seemed pretty clear to me that after she realized the mistake that was made in evicting Tommy, she kind of just lost all motivation. She lost hope. She realized that she had made the wrong choice, and she kind of just looked defeated from there on out. She didn't seem like she had the drive to keep going and to make a push for the end. It was kind of like, all right, if we win the competition, like that's when her and Cliff made that decision. They said, all right, we know we need to win competitions or we're not going to beat Jackson and Tommy. So we have to beat competitions and beat both of them. So I think at a certain point, they just kind of saw the game as only winning competitions and not like obviously the many other ways that you can get yourself to the end by talking to people, by talking to Holly and making those points, which yes, she really should have been making all week and saying, Holly, they're voting for Jackson. Every single person who left the house has said Jackson is a strong player. Jackson deserves to win. Christy left the house saying, all right, Jackson's got this. It's been pretty clear that Jackson is a strong player. And if you want any chance of winning, I know how much you love him. You cannot sit next to him in the final two. We probably have an equal chance, maybe, or maybe you have a better chance than I do, but you cannot beat Jackson. You have to take me point blank, period. It has to be that way. And she didn't say it that way. She didn't lay it down. She just said, no hard feelings if you don't, but I think that you should do this. And that's not good enough at this point.
Yeah, well, I think it kind of goes back to what happened earlier in the season during Nick's HOH. Like, Nicole had been doing a lot socially and kind of, you know, being a little bit more active behind the scenes. And when she was kind of caught and called out, she kind of faded back for a while before she was able to kind of get it back together and then start really making moves again. And it's not that she was doing nothing during that time. She just, like, she had touched the hot stove and been burned and she didn't want to touch it again. And I feel like she's a very reactive person. And so when she kind of had that feeling of failure when Tommy went and when Cliff went, I think it takes her a longer time to recover from that. And so she just needed a little bit more time before she would have been able to really make those compelling arguments that way. Like, I think she has it in her, but she seems, at least from what I've seen, the type where if something goes very wrong, it takes her just more time to kind of get back into it.
And it's something that I think she'll learn from. And I think I tweeted about this. I think if there's any lock from the season to come back, Nicole will be back on a future season of Big Brother. She's not getting taken by MTV. She's not the challenge type. They are, if they, you know, next season or whatever it is, Nicole will be back on Big Brother someday. They saw the reaction to her. They need to get her back in the house. And I think when Nicole sees how the rest of this game played out, has a lot more time to think about it. I think she has the capabilities that next time she'll know I have to go in for the kill. I have to, you know, play pretty similar to how I played last time. It worked for me. I got far with the social game that I had, but in the end I need to go for the kill, and I think she can do it next time.
Yeah, it's like she needed to do the Kellen from Survivor, where she needed to trust her gut, because she went with Cliff and she trusted Cliff's gut, and that really got her into trouble in the end. But then, Matt, we got to see something really cool, where even though it was bittersweet to watch Nicole be evicted at the final three, she walked out, she gave Julie a hug, she started talking to Julie, she was all composed. Then she sees her mom in the audience, and I don't know about you, but my heart literally broke. I was so happy for her, but yet my heart was breaking for her, and it was really good TV.
It's just like raw television, just yeah, watching really that was. She, you know, she just looked in the audience, and that emotion, just every single person that was watching the show felt it.
Yeah, I also like Leona, where she was talking about how she thought she came in as a butterfly, but really she came in like a caterpillar. And then Julie was like, you are the butterfly. And then obviously fast forward to 45 minutes later when Julie's like, see, you are the butterfly, girl.
Yeah, that was so incredibly sweet. It was such a nice full circle moment. You know, I think that entire interview was just really adorable. It's very clear why Nicole won AFP. You know, I think that you can say, oh, well, the edit may set her up to be this particular way, or she was the underdog. But, you know, there's such a good heart there. And so I think that that this interview was just indicative of why she deserved winning America's Favorite Player.
Yep, she did. Exactly. So we get to the final two. And as I tweeted out, if Holly didn't fight for this money, I was going to be in the veil tonight. I really was. I needed to see her fight for the money. I was glad to see Kirsten that she did fight for the money. And I don't know about you, and I know you guys don't want to give Mickey a lot of credit. That's fine. But I thought the best thing that he did tonight was when Holly was giving her answers, he didn't look pissy. He didn't look mad. He wasn't condescending to her, because we've seen that in the past. Every time Josh even opened his mouth on 19, Paul was like shaking his head and ranting and stamping his feet furiously. But on tonight, I saw Jackson pretty composed and smiling while Holly was giving her answers. What do you say?
While she was giving the answers, he was doing a good job of that. But then you would see as it was cutting to commercial, he had his jaw was just clenched. Like, maybe he wasn't smiling so much as baring his teeth, you know? And I think Holly did do a good job in her answer. She knew that she had to say a lot in a short period of time, and she was trying to get those words per minute out. And I don't fault her for that. I think that she did a good job. And I don't think Jackson did a great job answering the questions that were asked. So I kind of at the start was like, oh, like maybe Holly's got this. And then as it went on, like, I was like, no.
I felt like he did a good job of answering the questions as a politician. He didn't answer the questions that were asked. He was asked about jury management. And he talked about day 44. I mean, does that have anything to do with jury management's day 44? What was that about?
Yeah, it would have been really nice for him to be like, I noticed on day 44 that I was at the absolute bottom of my alliance and I knew I would have to win you guys over if I wanted your votes in the end. I knew I had to get rid of you even though I worked with you. And I, you know, like something along those lines, you know, talking yeah. about what he had to do to get their votes, even though he knew he had to get rid of them after that point. But no, all it is, you know, I'm a guy of integrity and I told the truth and I was loyal when I didn't have to be. And I was honest when I didn't want to be. And I'm a great guy. Like that's his basis for winning. And it's like, well, it would be nice if he owned kind of more of what he did.
Yeah, I feel like Liana, he owned enough, though, with Cliff, because I feel like Cliff was ready to vote against Jackson if he needed to, if Jackson didn't give him what he wanted. But Jackson at least did say, and I from my perspective, Jackson did pretty well in the questioning. He was quick to answer. He didn't stumble. Holly had a couple awkward pauses that made her seem a little bit not as respected as a game player. Jackson was totally serious the entire time. I feel like he did a pretty good job overall about making sure that he was viewed positively by the jury.
Yeah, I actually thought that Jackson's answer to the first question, I know you can probably dispute like, oh, did he actually talk about jury management? I don't think that matters, because I think that first question was really about owning the game that you played. And yeah. I think Jackson did a really great job saying, look, this was game for me. You know, there were maybe some stumbles about the whole loyalty thing, but I mean, at least he was saying that he was playing the game. He lied when he had to, whatever, blah, blah, blah. So I think that that answer was really good. What I did not like was the question about the women on the jury feel that you're being condescending. And then him being like, well, I'm an intense person. Everything I do 110%, which in the back of my head, I'm like, oh, okay. So including the sexism, right. Got it. You do that also 110%. Yeah. So I was like, that's not a great answer.
I didn't get that. Kirsten, you're a woman. Why was this question being asked by Tommy? Can you please explain that to me?
Exactly.
It was a question about women for women. To Jackson about his treatment of women, and Tommy is asking a flippant question.
Well, because I feel like who? It's hard to, you know, face. Get out of here. It's hard to face. Sorry, it's a serious moment.
As we, for those listening to the audio version, Kirsten has a cat, and the cat decided to start cleaning itself at the very moment when she was giving her answer and on television.
Anyway, so I'm trying to talk about a serious topic, and my cat over here is being inappropriate. Anyway, so I think that probably a part of that is like, part of being a woman in this world is that a lot of the times you're facing behavior that you would not otherwise face if you were a man, behavior that you don't want to deal with, unwelcome behavior. And a lot of the time when you confront that, oftentimes you're not going to get a good response because guess what? You're just going to get called a bunch of horrible names. And it happens literally every day, all of the time. I guarantee you, if you ask a woman in your life, they have encountered unwelcome behavior. And it can be uncomfortable to confront that. And so, you know, Tommy at least was standing up and saying something. And so I can't get too mad that at least somebody stood up and was commenting on it and bringing it up. And that's what I would ask any man to do, is when you are hearing about unwelcome behavior that a woman is facing, that you say something. But yeah, it would be nice if like Kat had said it.
But I mean, like, who made the decision that we're going to give this question to Tommy?
Yeah.
Right. Because like, that was probably not Tommy's decision.
Yeah. And they said too, like this unrelated, but they were like, okay, everyone has three questions that you decided on. And I was like, oh, this is why they're giving us more time. Everyone's going to ask three questions. We're going to get such a better jury questioning. And then they all ask one question anyways. I'm like, where did the three come from?
Yeah, it was three questions collectively for each of the final two. That's what they were trying to say. They just didn't do a very good job of conveying that.
I was upset because I had like a brief moment of hope that they were actually going to do a slightly better job on the questioning.
Right. And this goes back to what I was saying, just about how if this was last season, if this was the season before, Jackson loses this jury vote 6-3, because those super fan votes, the Christy, Tommy and Cliff votes were going to Holly if this wasn't this exact season coming off of the past two. They very clearly made it seem like we understand the gameplay, but we don't want to vote for him. but to the side, we have to vote for him because we have to fix Big Brother right now. Like, that's what their intent was. And that's the reason.
Yeah. Let me ask you that. Are you mad about that? It seems like you're mad about that because I'm like, here's the thing. I know he's generally a horrible person, but I'm glad Jackson won the game. I feel like he played the better game. It was certainly the more aggressive game. And I feel like that what he did at the final five cannot be overstated. I know that people don't want to give him credit for it, but it was pretty amazing to watch. Just the thought process to follow Tommy into the have not room when he saw him on the HOH screen, that he knew he was going there to talk to Cliff and Nicole. He listened in on it. He wove that information into his lie about what he said Tommy said to him, and he stuck to his story like glue. And I know some people out there were like, Ali Lasher was on saying, well, obviously Cliff and Nicole should have discerned that that Mickey was the one lying because he was the one who was, you know, absolute about his story, and Tommy was more nuanced. But, you know, in the Big Brother house, nuance doesn't go a long way sometimes. I feel like the black and white story was the better one, and that's where he did his best work. And I feel like that has to be commended. So are you mad that he won, or you just kind of wanted the bitter jury result for shits and giggles?
No, I don't have a good answer for that. I think I'm mad that he won, but I'm also like, I understand why he won. I'm not doubting anything about why he won. I just feel like the way that the game has been evolving is that the juries are taking their emotions into account a lot more often lately. And that just feels like where Big Brother has been. Obviously, if this is a result that, you know, this jury result is going back to the way where they don't take their emotions so much into account, people, you know, a lot of people are going to appreciate that because that's where they want the juries to be voting. So I don't think this has to do with my personal opinion. I'm just kind of pointing out that I thought that Jackson didn't do so well with the jury questioning. I think that the answers that he gave and the reaction that he had to some of the things, like when Tommy asked him that question, he was just like, I was just being myself, and I was just, you know, being intense, and that's who I am. Like, that kind of answer wasn't going to fly last year. So I'm just kind of, I guess my point is just that I don't think that he did so well. I think that he really just kind of won because these jurors were had a point to prove.
Liana, are you with me in terms of you're glad Jackson won in terms of at least it wasn't Holly? Because if Jackson doesn't win, then it's going to be Holly Allen, 24 Wyoming, wins Big Brother. And I'm not necessarily here for that.
She makes healthy cakes.
That's right. It's one of her hobbies. Well, it's interesting, Matt, that you say that the jury felt like they had a point to prove, because if the point to prove is to award the game to the person who played the best, I'm actually kind of okay with that point,
right?
That they're going to try to make.
People are definitely going to appreciate that, the fact that they're going back to that way of voting. And like I said, I don't know which way I land on that right now. I get both sides.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's absolutely hard to process, especially when it's someone that you don't like. You don't appreciate their behavior, you don't respect their behavior, and you absolutely don't want to see them rewarded for that behavior. Yet at the same time, when you take a look at the moves that Jackson made throughout the game, it's like, well, yeah, well, compared to Holly, I know that she tried to answer her jury questions by saying she played a different game, she took out bigger targets, she played an independent game to Jackson. I mean, if you really put all the cards down on the table, I still feel like Jackson played the better game. And so there is a part of me that feels okay with him winning because of that.
I was okay with Holly winning too. Yeah, I hear you. I was okay with Holly winning too. But the one thing that I feel like that she didn't give enough credit for, and she really never remembered, was on day 44 when she lied, because that was her moment in the sun. She didn't do anything when at the final five, when Jackson was lying. She was basically there holding her hands to her face, like not even talking to Tommy during that house meeting. But on day 44, she was confronted directly. Do you know Kat? We think you know Kat. You know her. And she was like, no, I don't even know where this came from. This is crazy talk. Like, what are you guys talking about? I've never heard that before. And it's like, I never heard her brought that up, and I would have liked to see her bring that up a little bit, either Liana or Kirsten, whichever one of you wants to take it. I felt like that she did herself a disservice by not talking more about the times that she did lie effectively in the game, because I feel like that those votes were gettable if she gave them a reason to vote for her.
Yeah, it's almost like she doesn't realize the parts of her game that she could have magnified to convince the jury. Yeah. Like, she doesn't know which parts were the most valuable, and that, I think, is the main problem there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think she had a hard time conceiving, okay, what is my game? I know I want to make it distinct from Jackson, but what exactly does that mean? And I think that was pretty evident in her answers to the jury questions. I mean, I'm sure she was nervous, completely understandable. But at the same time, I think you have to come in with a super cohesive narrative that will resonate with the jury, and just felt like she didn't quite have that down.
Yeah, I feel like she needed a cleaner speech, I felt like she needed to throw Jackson under the bus. I felt like she needed to really hammer home the fact that, you know, I like, even though you guys look, it looks like he was the one driving the bus and I was the one, you know, kind of with the reins behind him. I'm like, I really wanted her to drag him more and be like, you know, I used him as a shield in front of me because I knew I needed him to get myself here. Look what I did. I needed it to be a simpler story for the jury to buy. But I have to tell you, once it got to the point in time where they're putting in the keys in the box, I was like, Jackson's got this. I mean, Christy might as well, Matt, have put her key out in the open at that point when she said that, you know, she feels a couple different ways, but she's going to vote on game. And that's what she's going to vote on. I mean, I knew she was voting for Jackson at that point. Yeah, or Mickey, as the keys said. They just
also known as Mickey.
Oh, yeah, I know, right? Yes. Oh my God. Jackson Mickey the entire time. I wanted to say really quickly before you address that when Julie cut to the final two and said, Mickey, Holly, you know, we're gonna here are your final two questions. You can give two speeches, and immediately Holly's like, Jackson, it's been amazing to spend this life with you in the game, and I love you, and that's great. And I was like, that's just a little more shade at Julie. But then they got the last laugh in when they wrote Mickey on the freaking keys, and I'm like, it still bugs me to no end.
Oh my God, I half expected Sis to just walk up and be like, I'm sorry, who is this person? Right? I don't know.
I'm waiting for the backyard interviews where Sis claims that she meant to vote for Holly instead, and she pulled a Topaz, but we just didn't see it happen.
What they should have done is put pictures on her keys so they can get confused.
She still would have been confused.
Well, but like, not about that.
Oh my gosh. You're
like, who is this?
You're like, wait, this isn't what they look like. What?
Look, in the end, like, Holly got more votes than I thought she was going to get. I thought she was going to get, like, I thought it was going to be like 7-2 or 8-1 mm-hmm. with only Kat voting for Holly, but she actually did get votes from Nicole, Jessica, and Kat. So Jackson wins 6-3. Mm-hmm. But before we find out that Jackson wins 6-3, we got to talk to the pre-jury, and this is where things got fun, and I was definitely here for it. The first thing, and I was kind of shocked that they included this, the house meeting with Nicole being locked out of the HOH room, Kirsten. It was really, really fun that they were dragging the people who were a part of that, and they let Obi be the spokesperson for that, and I was here for it.
Yes, it was absolutely perfect. They set it up very well. Ovi is incredibly well spoken and did a really good job of explaining like what was absolutely not okay about that situation. And then, I mean, Nicole did not have prompting to know that that was going to come up, but I think she did a good job addressing it as well. Of like, you know, I tried to forgive and move forward, but I didn't see the footage. But Ovi like literally calling him out was great. And I was really glad that they brought that up as well as the other bad behavior.
I saw Paul from BB19 and or 18 and 19 on Twitter today, and he was talking a lot about how he's just so surprised that there's still no Big Brother reunion. I mean, Survivor has a reunion, The Challenge has a reunion, every show on Earth has a reunion. These reality shows, when you think about it, it really is kind of surprising that they don't do anything like this. This felt like I'm so glad that they covered all of this stuff. Like, this was some important stuff that we've been hounding CBS and Big Brother all season. Call them out on this. Like, you have to say something. You can't just let this go. So glad that it got covered. It also just kind of feels like the stuff that maybe would everybody would benefit from having it be, say, a day or two later, where they're just able to go look and see what they're talking about. You know, they've just been through like a whole like 90 something days, and this happened on day 24. So as much as we remember it, I feel like it would be beneficial to all parties involved if everybody knew the exact clips that were being talked about. Obviously they know what they did, but they're obviously not thinking about it, and they don't think that they did anything wrong because that's the problem here.
I had a little birdie tell me that Kemi was going to let him have it at the BB finale, Liana, and I was certainly here for it, but I really wanted Big Brother to help her a little bit more and play some clips and receipts of what she was talking about, so the house guest couldn't be like, Christy, I'm so used to saying Kirsten McInnes, or Christy, where she's like, it was my hormones and I didn't feel good and I'm fine. And then she apologized, but as Kemi noted, she didn't know what she was apologizing for.
I had no idea what they were talking about.
No, 100%. So a friend of mine were watching the episode together, and essentially she and I had this whole conversation about how we felt like Big Brother gave way too much time to the people who had caused all of this aggression, and essentially taking away from the people who are actually marginalized in this situation, because you have people like Kemi who got to say a little bit, but I mean, really not all that much. Where were the receipts? Like, I want to throw it in their faces.
I want
don't
receipts.
Give,
Here's
don't
the thing.
Give Jackson time to just Thank be you. Like, it's fine.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. Well, so they gave Jack and Jackson and Christy and everybody time to try to clean up their own mess, where they that time could have been spent more, Kirsten, by showing receipts of what happened.
Yeah, absolutely. Because only Jack had seen any of the footage. And even then, Jack managed to say his whole spiel without one time actually apologizing to Kemi, when he's the one who saw the footage, so he should have actually been able to do so. Like, you'll notice his words were, I can't ever apologize to you enough. I can't do enough. I can't apologize. You know, it will go a long way, saying I'm sorry and actually apologizing at
That's
all.
That's really good.
You know what? I recognize that sorry is never going to be enough, and I may never be able to make up to you what I did and said, but I am sorry and I'm going to try to make a change. That goes a hell of a lot further than, you know what? It's not personal. It doesn't reflect who I am as a person, and I can never apologize enough. Interesting how that's not an apology. And when Jackson apologized, he said, I'm sorry if I offended you.
If I offended you. Yeah, I caught that one.
Apology. So
that is not an apology. Yes, I have learned that in the past 10 years of my life. That is not an apology. Yes. All right. So then we get that. That's not really what I wanted, but I was glad to see that Kemi got to say some stuff on stage. And then they went another direction, which I did not expect them to go, but I was glad for it. They talked about the camp director thing and who Jackson banished for camp director. And this is when things started to go downhill for Jackson. This is when he really got the shit smacked out of him, Liana, with what's coming to him in the real world. When Julie pointed out that, you know, hey, you banished these three people and Cliff, David, Kemi, Jessica, and Cliff. Some viewers, meaning all viewers, thought that looked a little racist. So what say you, Jackson? And he was, even though I see Doom in the chat saying that they had clearly prepared Jackson, but I don't agree with that, because
he got the wind knocked out of him.
There's no way.
He got caught with his pants down here, Liana.
Yeah, there's absolutely no way. I mean, judging on his reaction, first of all, to the question, but then when they cut to commercial break and you can see him talking to Holly, he's like, oh my God, did you hear that? I mean, I just would have loved to have heard that.
He literally looked so shocked and mouthed, yeah. I'm not racist, is what he was saying. Like, there's people who could clearly see what he was saying. Like, there's no way they prepared him for that.
Oh my God. It was so funny though, because then his defense to that was, well, it's based on first impressions. Oh, what might dictate a first impression, Jackson? Yeah. It was very much I don't see that. Like, I don't see race.
He said, yeah, race played no factor in it. And like, it's really cute to say that when he obviously has no idea what an implicit bias is.
That's the thing. He didn't walk in there saying the N-word. I mean, it wasn't something overtly racist that we can all identify. But when you pick three minorities and the old guy for banishment on day one, it's going to have a bad look. And not only that, I've talked about this before. I wanted to see what some of the pre-jurors like Sam, Bella, what they thought of the fact that, you know, the first three people that were evicted from the house were all people of color. It was like, how can you not see that? Like, is it just something that you're like oblivious to? And if you don't notice the fact that the people who are evicted from the house are Ovi, David, and Kemi, and then, you know, obviously Cliff won his way back in, and then they evicted Bella just for, you know, shits and giggles there to make it 4-for-4 for people of color. It was like, what are you doing? Do you not see the optics of what you're doing? And it was like, Liana, it was totally lost on Jackson. And the other house guests, I guess, even people like Tommy may not have been fully aware of how it looked. And what I was asking at home was, how can you not see this? Like, you never thought about the fact that everybody you're kicking out is people of color?
I'm telling you, Jackson doesn't see it because Jackson doesn't see race. Okay. He's above that. I think I actually really, really appreciated David's answer because I think he addressed, he bridged the gap enough to say, Jackson, look, I understand that, you know, it was a game move. However, there was implicit bias that was part of the situation. And I hope that, you know, he can grow, Jack and Jackson, he addressed both of them, can grow from the situation, which I think that that's part of the issue is that Jackson doesn't feel like he did anything wrong. Nope. And so if he's ever going to improve, then he has to recognize that the things that he's doing are exact examples of implicit bias.
Yeah. And that's the thing, though. I feel like they talked over him a little bit when he said implicit bias and maybe it didn't get through Kirsten.
Yeah, you know, they definitely did. Like almost everybody else got to have their say. Jackson, Jack, Christy, all of them got to have a full say. And then when David is talking and making a really great point, Julie's like, OK, sorry, David, that's not enough time. And that he should have been able to finish that thought.
Yeah. Oh, well, we had to get to the really hot news of the hour, Matt, where we get to confront Nick with his bad behavior, where he left the house he left the house. Bella left the house saying, you know, don't make me look stupid. I think they even shared a couple I love yous in there. And then he goes to the jury and he makes googly eyes with Kat and kisses and whatnot and picks her up and it's all on camera and he knows it. And not only that, a producer even asked him about it. He knew that the producers asked him about it and he's like, well, I was hoping that they wouldn't show it.
Googly eyes and kissing and whatever. That's what's been going on in jury.
Well, you know, I mean, I don't want to get into it. This is prime time. I have to watch myself here on the prime time RHAP if I'm hosting Kirsten. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, he was not ready for that. I tweeted, he was not ready to see Bella in any way. Like he was not like, there's no point in his life where he would have been ready to see Bella again after all of that. I mean, after he left the house, he was very clearly like, all right, she's gone. Now I'm just, you know, now I'm into Sis again. And obviously we saw he was all over Tommy, which was another story. And then he gets to the jury house and he finds somebody he can actually like be with and probably was with pretty consistently, if you ask what it looked like. So yeah, he did not have any idea how to handle the Bella situation. And you can tell that she was very upset. You can tell from social media that she has been very hurt by all of this. And the two of them probably not going to be the best of friends outside the house, to say the least.
Probably not, I would say. By the way, did someone have something they wanted to say?
Yeah, I liked that where Nick was like, my mind went in a different direction.
I wasn't like, your head went in a wrong, direction.
He misspoke, obviously.
obviously. As I said previously in the podcast, make sure you get your questions in. RHAP, we're going to go to them in a minute here. Scott St. Pierre. So make sure you are getting in your questions. If you want us to answer them, we can talk about it. That's where my notes end, Matt. Jackson wins 6-3.
Hey.
Holly gets the votes of Nicole, Jessica, and Kat. What do you have some pressing news you want to talk about here?
The reason we're all celebrating tonight at the very end of the episode.
Oh, yes. I didn't even write anything. Look, here's the thing. I stopped writing at that point because I was so excited that it happened.
How do you miss the most important part of the episode?
Yeah, how dare you?
Nicole wins America's Favorite Player. That was the most important part. I was living for that, and we will put a pin in that really quickly as we go to these questions. So we will come back to that. I'm sorry. I just... Matt, what are you doing? What is this?
Nicole won America's Favorite Player.
I know. Oh, you have to wear the unicorn. I don't think they can see you right now. I'm pretty sure that... maybe...
We're just to the side, I think.
I need full screen.
Scott,
they can see you. They can see you. I'm sorry.
I
wasn't sure if they could see the question and the four of us, but now they can see you. So that's great. Okay, Scott, you can put that question back up again. This is a question from Lauren Brooke. Liana, who says, can you all please discuss that Jackson's father, aka Fish, apparently always says there is always a bigger fish. Do you understand this question? I'm not sure.
Like some hidden meaning behind that there's always a bigger fish. I don't know. I'm not sure. Although I will say Fish look like Bernie Sanders from behind. So that's why I thought that who was up there. But yeah, I don't know. I don't know what that means. Maybe that's all part of the colloquialisms that Jackson uses.
By the way,
maybe they call him Fish because he always says that.
It's definitely a possibility. I see some people in the chat are making fun of me that I made my screen name Brent from RHAP. I was actually on My Weekly Meltdown and I had to put in my screen name. So I put Brent from RHAP and then I haven't been back on StreamYard, which is what we're using to stream since then. So it just naturally came up because my computer remembered it. And that's why I'm Brent from RHAP. And if you guys didn't need a reminder, then you have another one. So this question from Ian at Ian Rice. Matt says, at Rob Sesternino, RHAP. Hashtag, if there was a game called Big Cliche, is there another player in BB history who could compete with Jackson, aka Mickey? What do you say, Matt?
Tyler? I feel like Tyler was big on those. I feel like
I feel like Mickey's better.
Yeah, better. But if there was somebody to compete with him,
or
I
worse,
feel like they're
depending on your perspective.
I just I appreciate Ian for clarifying that it's Mickey in case any of us were confused.
Wait, who's Mickey again? I'm confused.
Okay, I'm moving on. Kirsten, take this one from Franzipan 33. As much as I hate Jackson, the player who played hard won. What does this mean for future players? Will we have more cutthroat gamers on BB22? So this question talks about a little bit what Matt talked about, which is what effect will Jackson winning, having played a really hard game, lying his pants off at the final five and successfully coming through, basically treating Cliff like shit out the door at the final four and still winning the game. What does that say about the players in BB22 and how aggressive they might be?
I think that there is a chance that we will continue to see more aggressive games get rewarded, but I think that something to consider is always at the end of the day, these are real people that are experiencing real emotions. And if the player who plays the hardest is not able to own their game in a way that makes the jury feel okay voting for them, then they're not going to get the votes. And so that's also something to consider. Like, Jackson was able to own his game enough that it made people feel like, okay, I can vote for him, right? Whereas if someone, you know, doesn't own it and tries to lie about what they did and pretend they're not as cutthroat as they were, I think that will go the exact same way the last few years have gone.
Yeah, and I also thought that it was either maybe it was Matt or Liana, maybe it was you, Kirsten, who made a point of saying that some of Jackson's worst behavior was to the pre-jurors. And I felt like that the jury itself and the people that made up it were really able to wash their hands of it, Kirsten, and not really take too much to heart. Maybe Kat did, but I felt like that, you know, since by then she had revealed that she knows Holly, or I'm guessing she revealed that she knows Holly, that it was maybe seen, it fell upon death. Fears, I felt like. So,
yeah, Kat was a vote that Jackson was never going to get, and no one ever really took Kat that seriously the whole season anyway, so I don't think she was really going to be in a position to sway the vote. So
yeah, I'd say that's probably true. At Real Sunny 20 says, do you think any of the house guests changed their votes after hearing out Jackson and Holly? Matt, I felt like that they didn't change their votes, but I felt like Mickey actually persevered and got a couple votes that maybe could have gone against him if he had answered badly with Cliff's question, especially in terms of owning his game. I feel like, again, like as Leona said, he owned it just enough to make sure he kept that vote from Cliff.
I think the way that I saw the votes tonight was that they were pretty locked in from the start. I definitely think, you know, I see your point that maybe they could have changed if his answers were worse than they were and, you know, people didn't like what he had to say. But it did feel like the votes were kind of locked. The one vote that surprised me, which I don't know if it changed or whatever it was, but Nicole, she said, you know, being in the house with you two the last week, I made up my mind in that last few days, and this is where I'm deciding to vote. And, you know, she voted for Holly. There is something that I don't have the, you know, the statistics right now to pull up for you, but I feel like a lot of people who come in third don't vote for the person that evicted them. I don't know if that's just last season, Casey won, took Tyler, and JC voted for Tyler. Obviously, you know, the person that is in third also votes for the person that, like, they have a relationship with the person they're voting for usually. But the entire season, it did seem like Nicole was closer to Jackson than she was to Holly. So that was one surprising vote to me.
That is a good point, Liana. I felt like that Jackson really did lose Nicole's vote in the last week because he was so absolutely pissed whenever Nicole and Holly spent time together. Whenever when he heard from Holly that Nicole was campaigning to her, he was always talked about the fact that this was his money and no one was going to take it away from him. Nicole even brought that up to Holly. Like, he always talks about the fact that this is his money, and Holly's like, you know, I'm there too, and I want to win the money. And he acts like I'm not even there. So I felt like that was really the impetus for Nicole changing her vote here. I agree with Matt that I felt like she was a Jackson vote all the way up until the last week, but I felt like he did a good job of losing her vote by how he treated on her way out the door.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it just goes to show that jury management is important every single day that you are in the house. And, you know, even though you think, oh, it's the last week, I've got this locked up, whatever, it's fine. No, that person that's still there, it's important how you treat them. And I think that that's something that Jackson did that was definitely to his detriment that lost him that vote. So I completely agree.
Yeah, like he would spend the entire, like, you know, the competition would end and he would be celebrating with Holly. They would run off and you would see him celebrating. He's one step closer to the win. And then he would go find Nicole like hours later and be like, hey, buddy, you're doing okay, right? Like, let me give you a hug. Like, we're still best friends. You're like my little sister, right? And she was like, this is stupid. Why are you treating me like this? This is dumb. So, yeah, he definitely lost her.
Yeah, I think so, too. At Jillyfish93 says, who is on the shortlist for being a guest on the show? I'm guessing they're talking about our show, RHAP, but maybe they're talking about a different show. I don't know, Kirsten. If you can haggle your cat, make sure you answer Jillian's question about.
Yeah, if I could. If my cats could chill out. I think they do mean on RHAP. I feel like yes. Cliff's on the shortlist. Nicole's on the shortlist. I'm sure Ovi will be back. Kemi will be back.
Yes. And at this point, I feel like it's a good opportunity to discuss the fact that, as Matt noted, Nicole won with over 1 million votes, America's favorite player. Also in the top three were Tommy and Cliff. And a bit of a surprise to me, all of the online polls that I had seen, Matt had Kemi in the top three, although I think Cliff was number four. Yes. And it had to have been really close.
Yeah, the Kemi votes were obviously coming from the fans online. It seems very unlikely that the casuals remembered her. I don't think that she had been in any clips on the show since she had been evicted, unless I'm misremembering. But
I always felt like
we made a good push, the people who were voting for her.
I have to feel like she's number four in that count. Yeah. And I felt like it would have been really good for Big Brother, like if they want to try to put a nice bow on this season, Liana, when they're talking about all the shit that happened with the pre-jury and everything that they were discussing about the comments that were made and the implicit bias. If we actually got Kemi into the top three, I would have been living. But then I saw her over to the side when they came back from the break, and I was like, oh, she didn't make it.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think that there are things that the show can do to make that happen. We've seen that on BBCan, where one edit on one episode can cause a particular thing to happen when it comes to a fan vote. So yeah. I think if the Big Brother producers had truly wanted that, they could have at least done something to make that happen, and we didn't see that.
Well, and it's also the thing where, like, they could have lied. They could have been like, the top three is
thank you,
Tommy, Nicole, and Kemi, just to get the reaction. Because does it ultimately matter who's really in third place? Nicole thank won you. The votes. Who cares? Just to get that reaction, I would have loved to see everybody's face, the jaw drop, that, you know, that moment of, I'm sorry, who's in the top three?
Who is that person even in our cast? Who? Yes.
I'm sorry. Who? It's like, yes, the person that you've been talking about all season long.
Her. Yes, the person's name who you can't get out of your mouth, that person is in the top three. I remember when Cliff was making fun of the fact that, oh, you know, Kemi might end up in the top three of America's Player, but ha 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 ha. Like, and I'm like, you don't even know what you're talking about. And Cliff, you're a fan of me. I you know, you had some hits and some misses this season, but honey, that was not a good look. And I was really annoyed by that. All right. Anyway.
And for Nicole, I just want to also mention, is the first woman to win America's Favorite Player since BB50. 15, five seasons in between, 16, 17, 18, 19, 20. Five guys since then have won, and she finally.
Thank you for pointing that out. I did not
finally got it
that.
Back away from the guys. So happy for her on all levels, and just her genuine, like, she did not see that coming. And sometimes you know when somebody expects that they're going to be, like, Tommy probably expected he was going to be there. Cliff was probably hoping like hell he was going to be there. And Nicole knew, she had to have known that she was probably somebody that the fans were liking. I think,
no, I
mean, she
I don't
didn't
think really, so. No, I don't think that's true. I think that Nicole thought that, I mean, there have been plenty of people that were evicted in third place who we didn't give a crap about. I feel like Nicole thought that she made a dumb move at the final five. She paid for it at the final four with Clip getting evicted and then got herself evicted at the final three. And the fans probably thought she was a dunderhead. I don't think she ever in her million years predicted that she was going to get all the love and attention that we want to give to her.
Yeah, no, I don't think so either. I think that she's somebody who underestimates herself in a number of different elements. And so I think that this is just another one of those. I think that she, you know, she said, she was like, I want to be sort of the underdog winner. And I don't think she truly realized how much of an underdog she was and how well liked she was. And so it's just really nice to see her win AFP and just sort of have this physical and financial representation of how much we value her.
Yeah, it could not happen to a better person.
It really could not. I was so psyched for it. By the way, for those of you listening to the audio podcast, Matt has his unicorn. Yeah, I thought you were in the masked singer, Matt. I really thought that this was what you were promoting here, that you were like, Liana, don't you cover that show or something?
I guess we have to get Matt as a guest.
Matt, can you sing us a song?
Show and support.
Matt, did you rent that from somewhere? Where did you get that from?
I'll tell you later.
All right. Oh, my gosh.
Oh, no.
I don't want to know.
That sounds like tea to me.
Anyways, let's go.
Moving on. At Mindy Bond says, I feel soiled after watching the finale. Do you think Jackson got what was coming to him? Should Julie have called him a racist on national television with only a few seconds to respond? Whoever wants to take this one can go. I don't know that I have strong feelings about it.
Really discussed this. Like, we would have liked to have seen video clips so that everybody would know what was actually being said.
Yeah. That's the point that we're trying to make is without receipts, it's like anything in the news these days where if you don't have it, like if you don't have absolute proof, and even then sometimes people in the world don't believe it. If you don't have absolute proof of what was said at what time and to what person, you're not going to remember it. You're not going to think about it. It's just going to go out of sight, out of mind. And I really would have liked to see more receipts on it because they had them ready for Jack. They had them ready to go for Jack, but no one else. It was like, we're just going to take our word for it. And they were able to yada yada their way out of it.
Okay. Well, part of that, though, is because production just hates Jack. Like, did you see in the final three HO or like the final part of the HOH competition? Everybody gets their own segment and Jackson is like sitting in the wind with like terrible fan work because his hair is literally blowing in front of his face. Like, that's not flattering at all.
He was like out in the woods.
I know. I love to think that that was just the final dig at Jack. By the way, like, screw you.
He was doing a really terrible job. He does not have work as Jason Momoa's stand-in because he is not a good actor. He did a terrible job, Kirsten, with the handwriting there when he was pretending to write.
Just really write something. What are you doing? You have a notepad there. No one's going to read it. Just start scribbling letters. Write the alphabet. I don't care. Touch the pen to the paper. It was so bad.
All right. Here's a question from Brendan Linwood, who asks, Matt, I will give this one to you. Based on the tone Julie set with the pre-jury and the call-outs, does hashtag BB21 get relegated to the BB15 purgatory, where production pretends that it never existed? What do you think about this season? Are we going to talk about it, or are they going to try to forget about it?
They're not forgetting about it. They had some characters on this season that they loved, and some of them that I think, I mean, as much as Christy kind of came under fire a little bit tonight, but like the amount of effort that they put into keeping her in the house, I think from behind the scenes, they loved Christy. They want Christy around. Obviously, Nicole, I have been saying that I think Nicole will be back. I don't think it's anywhere near that level, just in terms of like CBS's like perspective on it. I think that they've been under fire since the Kemi eviction, when the three, David, Ovi, and Kemi were on stage and everybody was pointing out to them, do you see what this is? Do you see what this looks like? One of my tweets even, it was in like a People article about it. And I don't remember exactly what I said, but I was like, CBS, like, what, like, explain yourself. And they took this opportunity, I think, to explain themselves. So they had a lot that they needed to say about it, but I don't think that they're anywhere near ready to just let go of these people the way that they did with BB15. I think that they like a couple of them.
Yeah, I think so too. I don't think it's going to get relegated to the BB15 waste bin. At Amanda, please, Amanda Cult Tweets asks, Liana, do you think the casual audience was blindsided by Julie and the pre-jury's questions regarding race and controversy since they did such a piss poor job of showing it throughout the season? I think this is a great question. Let's talk about this.
No, I totally agree. I mean, even Ika, I think, tweeted out something about like, hey, can you send me the receipts for Jackson's racial comments? Because essentially it hasn't really been shown. We got to see the receipts from Jack, but apart from that, I mean, a lot of the stuff was really swept under the rug. And so, you know, I know Matt, you talk about like, oh, well, there was a People magazine article and they sort of talked about it. But when it comes to the actual show, really wasn't that much that was shown. And so I think that there is part of CBS that is trying to sweep it under the rug, especially because they went to Jack, they went to Jackson, they told them directly in the diary room, like, this is how you're being perceived. You need to correct this behavior. So clearly they were trying to stop that before it really escalated into anything. And I mean, obviously they were unable to prevent that from happening.
Yeah. Kirsten, I have to believe that you're with me and Liana and I'm sure Matt on this question. They blindsided the audience at the end in the finale by asking about all these things with the pre-jury and race and the controversy, but they never showed it on the show except for Jack's eviction.
Yeah. And again, that was only really moments with Jack. There wasn't that much of everything else that happened. So I think that without seeing what had happened throughout the entire season, it's going to be very difficult for someone who's only watched the episodes and is not keeping up online to know where this came from. They're going to be like, what?
Yeah,
what are you talking about? Mickey, they're going to be like, oh, Mickey's a hopeless romantic who protects his showmance. And that's what we've seen. So it's just a little tough without receipts.
I just have to hope that the audience is smart enough to see when the shots of the pre-jury were on screen and it was look at who's talking and you saw Sam and then four people of color and they were all, you know, expressing how they feel about the situation, you know, from everything going on this season. I have to hope that the audience, even if they didn't remember, they didn't see the clips, they see what they were talking about. It was clear as
day. That's a good point. I felt like that the best time, the even though it hurt, that it was really interesting when Cliff won the buyback competition, because then you saw Ovi and Kemi and David sitting up there in those uniforms from Camp Comeback with Julie Chen. And I felt like there was, you know, I talked about this before, there was no way the show could hide from it anymore because they hadn't said boo up until then. And they finally had to address it. And Julie Chen, that was right around the time where they made the rice pudding comment, Liana. And I felt like they finally had to face the facts that there were some issues with some of their cast.
Okay, so I went to the Big Brother Facebook page where we can truly tap into what the casuals feel.
Yes,
so
tell us what the casuals are saying.
Okay, so this is the comment that has the most liked. It's the most liked. It has 919 likes at the moment, and it says, Big Brother, you should be ashamed. To try to turn the live finale into a racial event and make it controversial is absolutely terrible. I've been a fan for 20 years, and this is the worst it's ever been. They go on for a bit. I think that's kind of an indication. Well, yeah, exactly. I mean, there's no setup for this, right? Because they don't necessarily have the backstory. So I can understand why they feel that way. But
that's the thing, Kirsten. I don't even blame this commenter or the 917 people that liked it. They have nothing to draw from. They didn't see it. And I have to believe that someone like who writes something like this and has no compassion in their hearts whatsoever for what some of the pre-jury went through probably would write this comment no matter what they saw on their television. But the fact that they didn't see it, I feel like gives them a little bit of an out.
Yeah, it would be nice for it to be a situation where there is no out, where you can't say, oh, they didn't know. Oh, it's ignorance. It's like it should have been shown so that people would know.
Yeah. Let's make this our last question. By the way, those of you in the chat room, can give us a hashtag that you want us to use for this show. Get that thinking right now. At Olivia Hess says, hashtag RHAP, love Dr. Will with the jury roundtable. How he called out Jack was great. See, I do not love this jury roundtable, Olivia. But anyways, but be that as it may, she says, but who else would you like to see mediating the jury discussion? Anyone want to take this one? We just love Dr. Will so much.
That woman from Big Brother 19, she pre-jury, Jessica, they should have a... No one's laughing.
Also, by the way, anyone who actually believes that was happening, A clown.
I thought there was more of a snowball's chance in hell that it might actually be happening because I just reasons and, you know, they're part of a showman's. I mean, I just felt like it might. They're from Big Brother 19, that they won the Amazing Race. A lot of people like Cody and Jessica. I was a Cody and Jessica fan. Look, I feel like here's the thing. Two things. I felt like that Jessica was intentionally trolling people by putting that out, by trying to get people to think that she was doing it. But then I also enjoyed Dr. Will, Kirsten, trolling likely Jessica from BB19 by saying that, you know, every year I host a roundtable, and I don't know if you saw the tweet or the interview that he did, but other former house guests always like to pretend that they're going to host it, but it's just to get attention. And I really feel sorry for them.
Yeah, he definitely was referring to a very specific person there. In response to the question here, I think, Danielle Reyes has said that she is interested in doing it.
Thank you.
She has been in the final two. She has been on a jury. I feel like it's a no brainer.
I feel like they need a winner, though. And I am with you in terms of Danielle Reyes, that's who it should be. But I feel like the show wants a winner, and it's cleaner for them to say, look, I won and you didn't, so let's talk about it now so that they have ownership of it. But on the other hand, if it was just like, I can see Danielle Reyes doing the mediating, and she said she wanted to do it. Yeah. So on the other hand, like, these people who watch Big Brother these days, they don't even know who their Big Brother history is. So like, they don't, it's amazing that they know who Dr. Will is, even though he's got gray hair now, but I don't know that they know who Danielle Reyes is.
Do you think that, like, there's probably a large majority of people who are like, I don't know who this person is who comes and does a round table every year?
Yeah.
That's sad.
That's sad. Yeah. All right.
My answer is nobody. I want Dr. Will. Only Dr. Will.
He does
only
a good Dr. job. Will.
All right. Well, this is what we have coming up for you on RHAP. As I said, on the jury roundtable, the LFC roundtable. I'm thinking jury roundtables all the time. The LFC roundtable. I have something very big planned for you guys. So, you know, here's the thing. Taryn Armstrong and I have been looking for a vehicle to do something together, and we haven't found the right vehicle. I like the chemistry that I have with Taryn. I think it's a very yin yang chemistry. He gets Henri, I get Henri back at him, and we love to hate each other and hate to love each other. But ultimately, I like him and respect him, and I do like working with him. But we've never found the right thing for us to do. And then is for those of you who follow RHAP, we had Kim Matina on a couple weeks ago, who, as those of you who follow RHAP know, is the winner of Sequester season 2. And you might be intrigued to know that even though I was the one who campaigned for Kim to be on the show, I actually had not watched Sequester at the time. So when Rob asked Kim, what is Sequester all about? She said it's like a cross between Big Brother and The Genius. That was basically her description of it. The Korean game show, The Genius. And I was intrigued. I was honestly intrigued. I'm like, really? That's what it is? Because I thought it was this online thing, but no, it's live. It's in a house. It's like Big Brother, but with a twist. And so I went to watch it. And honestly, I was addicted from the moment that I watched it. I tweeted a couple friends of mine that this was like my new favorite thing. I was totally into it. It's so much like Big Brother in that they're in a house, but there are elements of Survivor in it where majority rules. There's no nominees. There's no head of household or anything like that. You're still voting. So your social game still is king. However, there are elements of The Genius in it where the format of the game is changing from week to week. And you have to use your strategic acumen and your social ability and your physical prowess to adapt to those changes in the game. For instance, one round they had a round where the person with the lowest number of votes went home. Another round they had everybody had a bounty for every other person remaining in the game. And if you got that person eliminated from the game and voted it out, then you would get an advantage in the game. So I instantly fell in love with it. And I was really, really psyched about it. So I went to Rob, asked him if I could cover Sequester season 3, because Sequester season 3 is starting tomorrow, believe it or not. And he said yes. I asked Taryn. Taryn was very much like me. He had never heard of it before. But once he started watching it, he was totally into it. So for the first time, RHAP can announce that we are covering Sequester season 3. It's coming up in this November. I think that Audrey Middleton, who runs it and produces it and does an excellent job. By the way, the production value of this show on a shoestring budget is absolutely phenomenal. Liana, I just want to tell you that they have a big pot of money at the end that you can win, and it's 20 crazy gamers like us, people who live and breathe.
I think it's $2,500.
It's $2,500.
I thought you were about to say $20,000.
It's 20 $1,000.
Yes. Well, you know, they got a budget to work on, but it's 20 crazy gamers. Like, here's the thing. I don't even need the money, but I'm glad it's there. But they have 20 crazy gamers like ourselves who all live and breathe reality television. Audrey Middleton doesn't cast any Annalises, any Jessicas. They're not there, Liana. It is 20 crazy nutcases like ourselves. And I have more big news. I'm going down to Atlanta tomorrow to interview the cast of Sequester Season 3 for RHAP. So I am really excited about it. I got a new suit and everything, and I look smashing, I just want to say. So that is what we have coming up for you this November. Liana, are you excited about it?
Very excited. That's so great that you're going to go down and interview the cast. It's been crazy to see where Sequester has come, because I remember watching the first season, jumping between like YouTube chat rooms to follow everything, and to now having it being like in a real house and having the coverage. I think that's so great. I'm really excited about
Let me just tell you, I told Audrey Middleton, I'm like, what I'm so stunned by is, this is like a real show. Season 2 was spectacular. There was a time when it was like not as good. Like it was online and you couldn't follow it and you had to be there live. And I admit that that wasn't great to watch. It wasn't easily digestible by a mass audience. But now it is. She learned so much from season 1 to season 2. And it just like it really hit me like, where the hell have I been, Matt? I know you were a fan of the show as well because it had your boy Jesse Larson on it.
I loved season 2. It was great. And having some, you know, it's hard to say returnees because they're not returning to Sequester. Some of them actually were. But having people that we've seen before on Big Brother Canada, Big Brother US, The Amazing Race, like all of those people that participate in the game. I don't know anything about the cast for season 3, but if that's the case again, it's so much fun to see those people mixed in with some hardcore fans of the game who are just dying to play something. And, you know, not everybody can get on Big Brother, but there's a lot more room on Sequester for people to play the game. So I think this will be a lot of fun.
It's really the truth. Honestly, like, I have to tell you guys, like I said to a friend of mine, Taryn Armstrong, he's a tough nut to crack. Like he's a tough audience. I wasn't even sure when I went to him, like when I said, hey, like if you want to, would you like to cover this with me? I don't know if you've watched this show before. He's like, you know, I meant to watch it, but let me take a look at it. And then he got back to me. He was like, I absolutely love it. This is great. This is like, so if you're a fan of Big Brother, you are going to love Sequester. As I told Rob, it is catnip for RHAP. It's got strategy. It's got, gamers. It's got physical competitions. You know, the format of the game changes week to week, and I am so here for it. So that's what we got coming up for you this November. Make sure you're on the lookout for that. We're also going to do an introductory podcast, me and Taryn, about why you should be watching Sequester and what to appreciate about the game and why you weren't before. By the way, for those of you, I see this in the chat all over the place. First of all, I made this art that you're seeing right now on the screen. But there's a lady in Sequester. It's called the Sequester Bot, and she only has one arm. So I just put me and Taryn Armstrong's face over it, and that's why it looks like I don't have an arm. But I am well aware of the fact that I do not have an arm. I wanted to put me and Taryn together in the screen. It actually looks like we're getting married, Matt. That's what I'm getting from this.
That's what we all expected was going to come eventually. So
yeah. Now, Kirsten, you're a fan of reality television. Are you psyched about us covering Sequester Season 3 and me going down to interview the contestants? And I have my own note cards here ready for it.
Very official. I'm very proud of you.
Thank you.
The professionalism jumped out. It's always exciting to get more coverage. I haven't seen all of Sequester Season 2, but I've watched some, and what I've seen is really fun. And I think it'll be a fun new element to get some coverage of it as it goes.
And it's a perfect time of the year for RHAP, from November to about early February, when we don't have a crap ton of content on RHAP because Survivor's ending, and then with, you know, December, January, February, not a lot there. So I feel like it's a perfect time of the year, and look for that. Like I said, do we have a hashtag from the chat room? I think I saw hashtag boy gets confetti. I saw something about Brent's takeover, and you guys can use that if you want, but I like hashtag boy gets confetti, because we all know what we were thinking, Liana, when we saw the boy get his confetti this time.
Oh, so beautiful. He was so upset.
He did not expect that confetti.
It was not what he expected.
That was not what he expected. Yes. I'm still looking for the hashtag. Well, we might go with that, but there is some more stuff coming up on RHAP. I wasn't sure if we had more stuff coming up on RHAP.
How about just hashtag Nicole appreciation party? Let's continue.
Fine. Well, let's do that. Okay. I tell you what, we're changing our mind. Hashtag Nicole appreciation party. I know some people were trying to get that trending earlier. They did a pretty good job, but with the strength of RHAP, I feel like we can really do it, and that let's concentrate on something good. So Screw Jackson and the boy gets confetti. Hashtag Nicole Appreciation. What was it? Nicole Appreciation Day?
Was it day or party? I don't know.
I thought it was party.
I don't know.
I think it's party.
Nicole Appreciation Day.
Whatever the trending hashtag is, please.
We're okay, having
whatever
a party
the trending hashtag is. Yes, the hashtag, the chat is saying Nicole Appreciation Party.
There we go.
Also coming up for you, Survivor 39, Episode 1 recap. Who is this with? Oh my God, it's Rob Cisternino and Taryn Armstrong, who are at this very moment in the backyard interviewing I know, right? They know each other. And also another season 39 premiere recap with Reem Daily Kirsten. Goddess Reem is coming back to RHAP, and I know you're happy about it.
You know what, dude? I'm happy about it.
I am, dude. I'm so happy about it, Matt. That's the lady who we want to see. Also, Liana for the RHAP B&B Survivor 39 Episode 1 podcast of the premiere. The first lady of podcasting, the flop herself, Nicole Cesarino, is your guest. What do you have to say about that? Do you want to tease it?
Oh my gosh, super, super excited. Nicole was on last season and it was amazing. So definitely looking forward to this. Mike and I have already chatted about a few games that we're going to do. So definitely check it out. It's going to be a lot of fun.
Excellent. I can't wait for that. Also, David Bloomberg and Jessica Lewis are back with Why Blank Lost. They're going to talk. I don't know who lost, and I don't want to know because I haven't watched Survivor yet. I was preparing myself for tomorrow, for my interviews I have to do, plus the finale podcast tonight. I was getting ready for everything, but David Bloomberg and Jessica Lewis are back. Also, if you want to become a patron of Rob as a Podcast and get all this great content and support the podcast, you can do that by going to robhasawebsite.com/patron, and you get access to patron only shows, discounts, community, RHAP swag. I actually have some Taryn swag that I may wear tomorrow sometime when I'm not in my suit. So it should be a blast. And as I said, we're going to go with hashtag Nicole's Appreciation Day, or sorry, Nicole's Appreciation Party as the hashtag. Kirsten McInnes, where can people find you if they want to see you after this show?
Yes, so you can follow me on social media at Kirsten Said What, and they can find me doing weekly Riverdale recap podcast with Mary Kwiatkowski on Kowski Cast. That is Cow with a K.
That is another Sequester alumni, is Mary Kwiatkowski.
Yes, Mary Kwiatkowski, yes. Sequester. She played before it was in the real world.
Yes, before it was in the real world. Exactly. So Matt, where can people find you?
Find me on Twitter at Matt Liguori. And if you want any more of me in the next coming weeks, the challenge is still going. It pretty much just started. And I'm doing weekly recaps of the challenge over on the Dom and Colin Network. So check that out. And hopefully I can hop on with you guys at some point and talk Sequester. That'll be a lot of fun.
That will be a lot of fun. Dom and Colin, big friends of the podcast. So I'm glad to see you're still getting work over there. Liana, where can people find you?
You can find me on social media at Liana Boris. In addition to the RHAP B&B, Puya and I will be covering The Masked Singer. So I haven't watched that yet, so please don't spoil it for me. But yeah, we're going to be covering all of the ridiculousness that is The Masked Singer. Thank you, Matt, for inspiring me tonight. So definitely look out for that in the wrap-ups feed.
Excellent. And you can always find me at One Lucky Gay. Matt has his Nicole unicorn hat back on. Matt, that is such a great job. I love that. I'm so glad you brought that out tonight. That really makes it for me anyway. I've gotten all of the appreciation, all of the DMs from people telling me that I'm rocking it as a host. Thank you guys. That's very sweet of you. I feel like I did a terrible job because at the beginning I totally lost my place because I heard my own voice coming back at me and I was like, wait, can you guys hear that too? Because if you can, that's terrible for this podcast. But no, you couldn't hear it. So that is great. Hashtag Nicole's Appreciation Party. Thank you guys so much for joining us. And make sure you look for the Big Brother interviews with Rob Cisternino and Taryn Armstrong. They will be uploaded on the website as time allows later today and into tomorrow. Thank you very much, guys. See you later. Bye.